This week on RSBB Update, we detail the changes to smithing and how their ultimate goal is to improve the mining economy. We also provide updates on the weapon diversity beta and have a frank discussion about the progress that has been made thus far on RS Mobile. This is RSBB Update, episode 728, recorded Thursday, June 13th, 2019. The High Pressure Hose. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Just Tanis and myself in this week, as per usual, a bit of a quieter week. I think we wanted to have a quieter week after last week and the hoopla of me disappearing for 2 weeks before then, eh?
Hey, you know, I wanted a quieter week. I don't really know if we quite got that, but here we are.
And, you know, it's Jagex being Jagex, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is... We're kind of getting used to this, where you think you're going to get a quiet week, and then all of a sudden it's stuff just seems to happen throughout the week.
It's better than a complete U-turn of a strategy like we had with Menafos, right?
Well, I mean, or more recent examples, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too. Maybe. I think that was a brief mention. But nonetheless, this week sees the launch of the smithing quality of life updates. And, you know, this is another example of an update that does something that many people on the surface aren't going to realize why it's being done this way. There were other solutions they could have done with this. And let me just read a bit from the news post here on this. So it says that one of the big problems with stone spirits is that there's already a surplus of ores on the market, so they aren't worth bringing along. And this is because mining in its current state is far less intensive than smithing, which I think we agree with, right? Because we both enjoyed smithing heavily, or mining when it came out. And, you know, people have said, oh, stone spirits, they're gross. Let's find something to do with them because they're very low value. And, I mean, hey, you could bring them along. They help if you're mining ore. I know they helped me greatly when I was going building my masterwork set. You know, having to mine only 600 instead of 1,200 ore, that's pretty damn nice. And it was cheap at the same time, too. So I was pleased about that. But in general, you know, the problem that this update is fixing, and I want to get this out there right now, and it is going to take a while to fix, is that they want to make mining more valuable. And it doesn't really say that anywhere in this news post, does it?
No. But that goes back to the original goal of the rework to begin with. You know.
Right. And, you know, you want mining to be valuable because it should at some point through the various levels that it goes on, you should be able to say, go out and mine gold like you had that mini gold rush, or, you know, maybe mine rune or bainite or some of the Animikas and make a profit along the way to 99 or 120 mining, right? So people aren't able to do that right now because we were at a point shortly after the update hit where the ores, at least the top-end ores, like the Animikas, had hit elk value, which is just plain disappointing, right?
So yeah, they should be at the same – I mean, they should be at the ore value. And because they have never even been remotely close to that, I've been someone that said, is this something we really even need at this point?
What, the stone spirits?
Yeah, the stone spirits.
Yeah. So the idea behind this update is people are wondering, why are they focusing on smithing when the problem with the economy is that stone spirits are worthless, and at the end of the day, mining doesn't really feel that worthwhile GP-wise. So the emphasis from Jagex on this is that, you know, they could have ticked with the way mining worked, or they could have modified stone spirits and added more of a use for them, kind of like what we talked about at one point, building salvage. But instead, what they decided to do was make smithing more enticing by making it more AFKable in the hopes that people will, of course, use more of the bars that have accumulated in-game to the point where they will drain out of the economy slowly. And for anybody wanting a quick fix on this, I don't think we're going to see that because, you know, we have 6 months' worth of product effectively stacked up in the ors and the bars in games. So it's going to take a while to filter out. And I think that's something that many people who are looking at this update on the surface didn't realize, is that this was the attempt to make mining more valuable. But it wasn't communicated that well, I think. So,
I don't understand a lot of the criticism on this particular because it's kind of the smartest way they could have possibly addressed the situation that was going on. Whether you're an opponent of this or not, AFKscape is a thing. We just had a just did a bit about that.
An amazing bit.
And yeah, it was pretty good. And we know what in the ideal scenario you're going to have that three-legged stool of skilling, and Smithing's AFK leg was a little weak, and really what it's doing is just propping that up, giving you a choice, and hopefully being able to draw more ore out, because it's like putting a high pressure hose like end on it, right? Like so much, like just squirt just a little bit out, you know. And so this kind of is opening up the hole a little bit,
yeah.
So
yeah.
That more material can get through.
Yeah, that's actually a very good analogy on that. So let's actually dive into this a bit, because I want to illustrate to people who might be doubting this news post that this is actually going to fix the problem. And before we get into this, I actually just want to say that when you're tinkering with a game economy, sure, you know, you could go the route and you could have the amount of stone spirits that come into game, or you could create a sink for stone spirits. But they're not really identifying here the core root of the problem. So First things first, I would say, let's have a look at the smithing side of this update. And then, you know, 3 to 4 months down the line, if the economy is not responding, then I would say expect to see further changes to stone spirits and mining. That would be my guess on the timeline that we're looking at on this. So,
I mean, I know that it's all, everything affects each other, right? So stone spirits affect. It's a symbiotic relationship here between the mining and the smithing side of things. But I almost feel like they probably could have gotten either rid of stone spirits or made them cost more. Not cost more, but like say it took 2 stone spirits for
1 hour.
Yeah, or just however you wanted to work that out, like make it a harder chance.
And we talk about this a lot in real life too, that when you're dealing with economies, and especially in the real world, economies these days are based more on psychology instead of government policy and monetary policy. And we might be seeing some of this in RS as well, I think.
Oh, that's especially true in RS. I mean, we are like the epitome of that. I mean, look at last week's May sale. Like, you know, and that was over a fictional product.
That was a beta.
And a beta. Yeah. So, we are the example of that.
Yeah. So, anyways, getting into the smithing changes, and hopefully this kind of illustrates why these things happened. The first one is you're now able to have multiple unfinished items at once. And this is a little bit cumbersome to realize how you actually do this. So what happens, of course, when you make a new smithing item is that it winds up in your inventory and you use it on the forge, and it winds up having, of course, full heat. Now, if you click that forge again, it will say that item is already at maximum heat. So what you actually need to do with that is you need to right-click on the forge, and when you right-click on the forge, you'll get an option to reopen the smithing interface so you can make another item. And, you know, this isn't something that's easily said, and it doesn't say anywhere in the news post. So this is, of course, buried behind a right-click option. I don't know how this is going to work on mobile or where they're going to teach about this, but, I mean, you know, if you're just smithing, you're not going to know about this unless you're trying to be horribly efficient on this. So I just wanted to mention that at first. That's how you create the second item. Now, the next change following this is that if you do have those multiple unfinished smithing items in your inventory, it will automatically move on to the next item when it ends up creating it. And it is 100% transparent in that, which is pretty amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, this was this is one of my favorite changes of the week. This is exactly what kind of makes it more AFK, but it took me a minute to find it.
Yeah.
Just because of the way that it works, unless you're right clicking, it took me a minute, and I almost felt like, what am I doing wrong here? You know, like, where is this? I knew it was coming. I had read everything. I knew, like, I was as up on what I should be able to do as anybody. And then, you know, I right clicked with going through the stack, and then I could see that. But, you know, part of that's probably just me.
Yeah.
Well, I wish there had been another way of doing that.
And I'm trying to think, there wasn't really much onboarding with the new, with the smithing rework when it came out, was there? It was mainly just in, you know, news posts and the people you talked to, right? Like, have you heard about the smithing rework? So, that is something that could be better telegraphed. And of course, those of you guys listening to the podcast will know that. The next change is that the progress that you earn from swinging and hitting that item when you have no heat, low heat, and medium heat has been increased. And, you know, this is good, of course, because it fosters the AFK smithing. And also, of course, if you are using the auto heater, which I think is a good point to jump down to right now. So previously, the auto heater would use 5 coal and it would heat your item to 30% heat, which would be low heat. Now you have an option to upgrade it from the initial 4,000 Dungeoneering tokens that you spend on it up to spend 40,000, and you get the advanced auto heater, and it's got a toggle on it where you can have it in overheat mode, which will reheat your item to 60% heat when it reaches 0% for a cost of 50 coal. And of course, this is the ultimate in terms of fostering AFK smithing, because if you're using the Grace of the Elves and the prayer, the Saren prayer that I'm forgetting the name of at the moment, combined with this, this will effectively allow you to have high heat until you get down to 33%, and with the auto heater, voila, there you go. You now got, you know, 33 points of heat that you can, rather 30 points of heat that you can use for this. So
at the low cost of 50 coal.
And you know exactly how much that that's going to take out of the economy too. So I'm pleased
about
that.
I thought this would be the one to put a smile on your face, because not only you found a use for coal, right? And I'm curious just to see how long it will take, if at all, to raise the price of coal. I mean, I don't know. I haven't figured out where the coal is coming in from.
Kingdom
to have the like. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess. That must be it.
That's the biggest source. That's like, that's easiest to bring in. It has jumped from 105 or to 105 from 83 back on June 3rd. It's jumped a bit in that amount of time. And if we go back to the 365 day price range, it was previously at 167 before the update hit.
Okay. Well, this is good all around. I haven't bought mine yet because, I'm stingy with Dungeoneering tokens.
Yeah.
I've been saving everything for that, you know, auto accumulator. So
yeah, I took the sacrifice for the team.
See, I'm as soon as I get enough on Junior, I'm getting the auto heater upgraded for that one.
But yeah, $44,000 to go get the complete auto heater, the base one and the upgraded one. So
okay, yeah.
Okay, other changes that came this week include upgraded armor spikes. So, you know, previously you'd make armor spikes with an Elder Rune Barn, you get 1,000 of them. Now you can make upgraded armor spikes by taking your existing spikes and using a concentrated alloy bar, which is the bar that you use, or rather is created by combining one of every other bar in-game. So, you know, once again, taking more out of the economy. And I think the hope is that these will become a staple on pretty much any task that you do where you're in melee distance, because they have a 10% chance to deal 10 times the damage of regular armor spikes. And anybody who has used these armor spikes will know how quick they hit, because they're like bang, 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 one after another. So they're going to be procking off fairly often, 10 times the damage. So
that's... I think we finally got the item that we were looking for when we talk about a smithing version of an overload. I think they finally improved the armor spikes to the point where maybe we can say that now. That it's, you know, the overload of smithing.
Yeah, I just don't know how many people are actually using them. Because you have to remember that every time they activate, the damage is equal to the player's current smithing level capped at 106 with the use of pulse cores. And that's interesting. Pulse cores can factor into that. And if you're using a shield, damage is doubled.
Right. So this is going to be like anybody that does melee tanking, which I don't know where you would do that, but if you do melee tanking, it seems like you'd want these with you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean... it's one elder bar and one concentrated alloy bar. And I mean, if there's enough of these coming out of the economy, then that's a good thing. Though I don't know, you know, I'm going to be completely honest. I have no idea of anybody who used armor spikes on Slayer tasks when they came out. So that's what we're working from.
Yeah. Well, the concentrated, that's
because that requires 99 smithing to make. Yeah. So, and 99 smithing, right?
Yeah, I mean,
and
90
smithing for the other one.
Yeah, we got the item we were looking for. If it's practical, that might be another... I mean, that might be a different question. But it definitely serves what we were hoping. You know, it's the purpose of an item we were hoping for.
Yeah.
That, you know, that unique smithing item. But it may be too costly to make it practical.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a place to use these. I mean, I think anybody who's doing melee slayer tasks should definitely use them. And I mean, think about it this way. If you're going into doing a slayer task and you can have a chance at completing it maybe even just a couple of minutes faster, I think that's something you definitely want to take, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, and especially I would say, you know, if money's no object, but it's not even money. It's money and time in this case. Yeah. There are certain ones I don't know if I would use it on a, like an Abbey task or something like that. If I was working with those, you know, the newer Slayer mobs, probably.
Like the mini boss ones?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd probably.
Yeah. You know, one thing I'm thinking of with the weapon diversity beta, you know, factoring in maybe a scimitar or something like that, somebody who's leveling up, I think, like, just put yourself in the shoes here of having someone who's a skiller who has 90 or even 99 smithing to actually just 90 because, let's see. Yeah, okay, 99 smithing to make him. So let's just put yourselves in the boat of somebody who has 99 smithing as a skiller and maybe, you know, only level 85-ish slayer and is still in a point where they can use tier 80 and tier 75 weapons for slayer. Now imagine the weapon diversity beta comes in and you have scimitars and scimitars increasing the bleed effects and pair this with a defender for the defensive abilities, you're looking at, on average, about a 10% chance if you're using these armor spikes to hit an extra 1,500 damage.
And that's going to be quick damage.
Like, yeah.
Pretty rapid.
Yeah. So, like, and see, this is the thing that I want everybody to think of, because I know there's lots of you guys out there listening to this who are maxed. It's not always about the max player. It's about the people who might have 99 smithing, but only, you know, 70 or 80 combat or 85 slayer, right?
And we may see more of that if we do get a rush of new players with mobile, mobile being the more AFK-friendly, you know, way, and skilling being more AFK-friendly, you might actually see, for the first time ever, skills being higher than the combat
there
side,
you, go.
You know,
there you accurate. So there's our use for armor spikes. Also changed was a bunch of the drop tables for God Wars Dungeon 2 and Telos, which, I mean, let's be completely honest here. That had to happen, right?
That had to happen, but I thought the Telos stuff was laughable.
Yeah.
I mean,
Runestone Spirits have been replaced by Small-Bladed Rune Salvage, and Addystone Spirits have been replaced by Runestone Spirits.
That's the one that I just...
It's a bit of a head scratcher, isn't it?
I just don't understand why they couldn't take them off.
I think the salvage is maybe they have their reason. Though.
Yeah, that one's not bad, but the adamant to rune knight, I don't think that's enough. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Let's see, Telos. Let's see if they got these new drop tables here on the wiki. Yeah, Runestone Spirits. They drop between 91 and 616.
Wow.
Which, if you look at current market value, ranges from 46K to 314K. But the Small Bladed Salvage drops between 30 and 601 for a value of estimated ALK, based on 644K to 12.9 mil, depending on how much you get.
Jeez, what a... Man, that boss is so broken, dude. Yeah, wow. I guess.
And for the actual God Wars Dungeon 2 bosses, the frequency of Necrite and Phasmatite Stone Spirits has been reduced across all bosses. And I think that's the important one, because those are higher tiered. And I think people are going to use more Stone Spirits at the higher tiers. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I would think so. Those ones are the ones that don't come in... as easy through other means too.
Yeah.
So that's definitely going to dampen them down. And God Wars Dungeon 2, so you got to think, like, that's already replacing the ore, which was actually one of the, you know, it was an okay drop. I mean,
that it was ruining
mining. That is what they drop, you know? I mean, yeah. Like over time. So that one, I thought, would have more impact actually than even the Telos one. Because I just think God Wars 2 is more, it's done more.
You can get Necrite Stone Spirits from Beastmaster Durzag, Avarice in the Heart, of course, Grigorvik, Hellweir, Vindicta, and Yakamaru. Those are the only places you can get Necrite Stone Spirits. Meanwhile, Phasmatite Stone Spirits come into game through similar means as well. And those were previously going for around 650-ish K on, or 650 GP on the Grand Exchange. So.
Yeah. They need to, yeah. That's probably a good change. Will it be enough? I don't know. Because... I almost feel like Stone Spirits might have just... There might not be a way to pull them in at this point.
Right. And that's what I was saying. I mean, you start by pushing these very, you know, very slim buttons here, like the making smithing more AFK friendly, and then these changes to Telos, and you give it a few months and you see what happens with that, and see if anything changes in the economy. And if it doesn't, then you start to look for a different means to do it. So, and the last thing that they did this week with smithing was that they they made it so that you can have spikes now on your trimmed masterwork armor, and this costs you one glorious bar.
It's pretty cool, though. Like, it looks pretty good.
And there's going to be people who are going to pay for that, right? So.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, you know, this is one of the ones that you need to fold 1,000 at one time. So, you know, you're going to have to invest some time in order to do this. And, of course, these are sellable on the Grand Exchange. Now, the question is there going to be enough people who are aiming to do this that it's going to make smithing bars something that you might do? I don't know. That's an interesting question, I think. So we're going to be watching that one. Going forward, right now, market-wise, Grand Exchange value 1.3 mil for a glorious bar. And looking at the concentrated alloy bar for the armor spikes, those go for 40k each. So that's what we're looking at on this. Also, this week they have improved. What's that?
It's not that bad on the cost-wise. It's actually lower than I thought on the concentrated. Right.
So, I mean, I wonder if that might be an interesting moneymaker.
Well, for now.
For now.
It won't be by time to show kids out.
Yeah. That's the thing. Things change so quickly with the economy. Yeah. Also, the mining script has been optimized in terms of how mining works. And the changes made have led to a 30% performance increase in the way the code runs. And they say the only thing the player should note from this is that rock opportunities will now jump up to a square that's 6 squares away instead of 8. So less running around for mining with this.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I mean, I didn't notice anything with these changes, so I think that was just a nice little thing. They probably didn't even need to mention that in the update post. So, anything else on mining and smithing? I mean, aside from your Informer article that had a look at it 6 months on, I think that was good.
I still like the update. I still think it's the second best update ever.
What was first?
And Prif. Okay. My heart will always be with Prif. That was just a, I don't know, it was just a special kind of update.
Yeah.
But this is still really good. And I mean, I want you to think about this too. Like, yeah, there's some tinkering happening right now. My personal opinion is it is making the skill better. It's making smithing stronger, more appealing. But no matter what, no one's really hurting because something didn't work right.
Or, yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, that's what to really keep in mind. Like, they're working on it, but no one's been hurt by this. So,
yeah, and even the PVM community didn't scream too loud with it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you know, I mean, it's different with the comp cape rework because these two updates followed various, you know, of course, similar trajectories, but the outcome is different on them. And of course, the reason for that is because you're taking something away and, you know, adding things in that people might not like with the comp rework. So,
well, yeah. And people, I mean, people are so, and I've mentioned this on the show before, invested in
their pixels,
the comp cape. Yeah. But they really are. Like, it's more than pixels to a lot of players. And I don't think there is that same connection with, mining and smithing skills, you know? So it's, to me, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those mythical updates that have been talked about since like 2016, so.
Yeah, this is something that this is the one time I think people were apprehensive and.
But it was a collective apprehensive that everybody initially got on side with Jagex.
Yeah, no, we were, but it wasn't over. I don't feel like this one was overhyped to where people had unrealistic expectations.
We might be
really
talking about
like,
some of that later.
Well, we do have a tendency to have to cover that. But in this one case, I don't think it happened. So that's why I think it's good. It's still good, and it's only going to get better.
Yeah, and I think that's the attitude most people need to take with this. And you know, just to clarify what Joe RuneScaper was thinking, somebody you run into in chat and whatnot, they had no idea why these changes were being made. They had no idea why these changes had to be made, and they had no idea that these changes were actually to improve the value of mining, which, I mean, it makes sense when you drill down through it like we did, but if you're just looking at it from the surface, these just look like changes to make smithing easier, and you're not going to see that there's a benefit to mining without drilling into it, which is unfortunate. So,
yeah, and I don't know. You would think, though, like, people would make that connection. Like, they are so intertwined. One is dependent on the other. There's one doesn't function without the other. Like, whatever you do to one, it's going to affect the other.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with these two skills. I mean, there's lots of other partner skills like that, but these two, it's just something I've always remembered from the time I started playing. I thought it was so cool. You could mine your ore, and then you could make your own weapons, you know?
Yeah, and now you actually have something that is actually workable.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, let's move on to the patch notes then, because those are important this week as well. So there's a bunch of changes for mobile and whatnot on various Android phones, like the Nokia 8, the Google Pixels, you know, animation data optimized, some terminology issues that have been fixed. But we'll talk more about where mobile is in the mobile dev blog later. But moving on to actual patches for this week, the Ultra Elite chest awarded for completing all three Elite dungeons in a row is now named accordingly. I don't think I ever got that chest, even though I did complete all three dungeons in a row, though. Maybe you need to do it all on the same day or something. I'm not entirely sure on that.
Yeah, I'm not either.
An issue with free-to-play players gaining members-only items at the dig site has been fixed.
Oops.
Yep. The secondary action bar can no longer be accessed when you're in Legacy Combat Mode. And, of course, this deals with the Legacy UI changes that we talked about last week. As well as when selecting an additional action bar in the Legacy UI mode, it will no longer disappear when changing to the EOC interface. And for anybody wondering how you actually enable that, that is in the combat settings, which I believe is the third or fourth option down, and that's where you access the secondary action bar, how you turn them on, same way you do on the NXT set or on the new interface settings. Boy, we got lots of nomenclature here that's confusing, isn't it?
I was just sitting here thinking, how is a new player going to?
And we're going to talk about that in the mobile section.
Man. Yeah, no, I know. It's just funny how everything kind of comes together.
You know, I was thinking this Monday, you know, it's time for another mobile dev blog. And lo and behold, we got that this week.
Yeah.
The Ring of Forging now works when smelting ore stored in an ore box. That's good. You know, we don't really think much about the Ring of Forging, but that is very important at the low to mid levels. Ruby rings.
I didn't even know if iron kept that same quality of
it did.
Burning up or whatever. Yeah, I didn't even know.
Existing skilling outfits, including the factory outfit and XP boosting outfits, so this also includes things like the lumberjack outfit, have had set effect tooltips added, so you can now see exactly what the set effect is when you're wearing it and how many items are giving you that effect. I saw that in my woodcutting outfit, and that was nice. I enjoyed that. See, these are tiny, tiny little changes like this that just, you know, make the world go round, so to speak.
I had to look up what the factory outfit was. So.
Yeah.
Because I didn't remember that one.
Yeah. But, I mean, nonetheless, it's a good update. Also, on that same one, various combat equipment sets now also have set effects listed in tooltips. So you see this on things like the Ports Armor and whatnot. just, and you know, we need this because when you're looking at when you're looking at a bank or you're looking at a inventory item and it just, you know, says something that it's part of a set and it's the trimmed masterwork set, you don't want to need to go to the wiki and pull that up, whereas now if you hover over it, you can see it. There's also
If you did have to do the wiki, you can do that right out.
Yeah,
right,
slash wiki in game. I heard about some of the fun that you and Sirion had trying to break that.
Oh, Sirion.
Hey, I was going to go to the same space when it initially came out, so I'm glad that he did that.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, he caught it.
Also, if you have your search box open and you deposit an item, the search box won't disappear. So that's nice for the bank. And, you know, we're kind of – you're seeing these little changes here that kind of foreshadow that, hey, the bank rework is on the way because this is something that can be put in beforehand and was mentioned as one of the changes that was being made to the bank system. Chicken egg unchecked for the player-owned farm is now a members-only item. I don't know why that would be free-to-play in the first place, but there we go.
Yeah, like how does that happen? Because the farm isn't free-to-play, so how would you –
It's probably just some flag that was set because regular chicken eggs and eggs aren't free to play or aren't members.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
The players who had a full tool belt and weren't having the get tooled up achievement unlocked will now find that they have unlocked it on their next login. And this was a strange edge case that was related to the one false small favor quest that gives the key ring as the reward.
One small favor strikes again.
The invention materials window has now been made into an overlay, meaning you can disassemble your items and see the interface updated in real time. And for mobile players, you can tap on an invention material to see the full description of said material. And this one goes all the way back to when invention first came out. So I remember people saying, can we get an interface that we can have open when other things are open so we can actually, you know, move it around and manipulated and whatnot. I remember this going all the way back to when invention first came out, and oh my gosh, it's so nice to actually have this now where you can, you know, just pop it open and you start disassembling things and you see the counts of your materials go up. It's very nice.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I actually did this. I disassembled an inventory of vials, and every time I saw a smooth part happen, I, unchecked my game filtering thing, and oh, there we go. We ticked up, and off we go. So, very nice to see that change made this week.
Yeah, you'll probably even start identifying things that you're getting out of breaking certain items down that you never even knew you got before.
Yeah, and I mean, people can already do that, but I mean, when was the last time you met someone that didn't have their game text filtered?
It's true. Well, I turn mine on and off. It just depends what I'm doing, yeah.
And the final patch note, the bubble blower has been made into a two-handed item, so it will no longer cause some weird animation issues when an offhand item is equipped. And, of course, this is from the beach 2 years ago.
I don't even want to know what kind of glitches could have came from the bubble blower.
But, you know, one thing I have a real issue with is that, you know, when you're asking for a description on something and someone says, oh, it looks weird, or this is causing a weird animation issue, that tells me nothing because weird is different from me and you. But, I mean, I'll just accept this at face value so we can move on.
Whatever it was weird.
Yeah. All righty. So next up, after the patch notes, I think we should go have a bit of a chat about the weapon diversity beta changes. And you know, the link that was tweeted out was to the subreddit, and I'm not sure if they posted these new changes onto the forums or not. So I'm actually going to have a look at that now. Aha! They did. Excellent. Because, you know, we don't like linking to the subreddit unless we absolutely have to, because it. It kind of fosters a question of, is the community kind of driving discussion and whatnot? And we always here for the show prefer to go for the official sources of things. So the beta was updated this week, and with this, they did add on a number of things, including more combat supplies and equipment that players were requesting, as well as for the people who couldn't get their accounts to load in correctly with all their stats, who were loading in with level 3 accounts. They did have an option to set all stats to level 99 or 120, effectively a max button. They also had a button so that you could, or rather a UI where you could generate your own invention perks so that you didn't need to spend the millions on generating perks. And if you wanted to see how an item would perform with a specific perk, you could just generate that perk in the beta for free as well. So that's interesting that they're doing that, I think.
I thought it was pretty cool. It's definitely given players a lot of ability to try different setups and really max out what weapon diversity could mean for them and their, you know, and their main boss encounters.
But overall, that's the important thing.
Yeah, and but you know what? These were all changes that I 100% anticipated and thought we would probably get, because I don't think there's been. It hasn't been long enough yet to really make major, major changes.
Well, we do have some of those.
Well, like with the maces and stuff?
Yeah, but we knew that going in.
Right. Yes. I mean, exactly. Exactly. I think the doing the actual, the other little things were things that they needed to do just to make this a better and more accurate beta in the long run.
Yeah.
If they can keep people coming back.
Yeah, and you want people to come back because, you know, if you go into a beta and you use all your food, you can't necessarily go to the GE in the beta and buy food because it just doesn't work that way.
Right, yeah. And now you can import your character.
Yeah, once a day.
So,
first change made is that Earth spells now only provide a 10% damage boost. Previously, it was 20% on stunned and bound targets. That's good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Maces, the net effect has been reduced down to 200% from 300, which is 150% boost based on the prayer bonus for the main hand and 50% for the offhand. You know, chatting with David and whatnot, following up from last week, this is still an immaculate amount because
that's kind of what I was
because it's a
too.
Plus 11. Yeah. The trim masterwork has a plus 11 combined prayer bonus. Previously, that'd be a plus 33. We're still looking at this if you're dual wielding maces, plus 23 strength bonus on this. So, I mean, it's good, but I think people are still going to flock to the maces. So we'll have to watch this.
It probably needs to be toned down.
But at that point, you're moving to, you know, 150%. That's not even double.
That's true. I was just going to say, like, I think this is it's good, though, that they didn't just totally wreck it.
Totally put a spear through the heart.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, at least it's small increments, but that's probably what – I mean, that's what we're going to need to do to dial that in anyway.
And just like the smithing stuff, you don't want to press, you know, heavily. You just want to press – give the buttons light presses. So.
Yeah.
Thrown axes have a new effect. Attacks now have a 5% chance to bind your target for 3 seconds, and if the target is bind immune, you will deal 10% more damage.
I thought this one, I didn't.
I thought the previous one was fine with gaining adrenaline.
Yeah, I thought so too. I don't like
because it was 4%.
This is gonna 4%. Sound dumb, but I don't like it thematically. It doesn't go together. There's a throwing axe and binding has nothing to do with each other. I can't make that connection.
This would be a good PvP weapon if they did that.
Yeah, probably would.
So.
But there's plenty of other things they could have done with this. The axe is about like the adrenaline or the critical hit. Like that's kind of the feeling you get from
critical hit. Hey?
Yeah, that's what you feel when you're throwing an axe, you know, like, and it sticks in the wood and it's like, ding, you know, you're like,
you want to call that these weapon diversity beta updates come out in September and they have a throwing axe station at RuneFest this year.
Oh, yeah, probably. I'm sure. I'm sure of it. That'd be fun, too.
All right. Continuing on with these changes, one-handed crossbows, they have increased the chance of the basic ability firing to 4% when using a main-handed, one-handed bow, and this chance is increased to 6% when dual-wielding. And this is exactly what we said last week with these one-handed crossbows. It was 2% previously.
Yep. That's exactly what David was talking about.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I did the math in my head, and you're going to need to have lots of hits at 2%, and this greatly helps. So, and didn't we say something like 5 to 7%?
It was in that neighborhood, I thought.
Yeah. Okay.
But they still didn't add a cost to it, right? Because that was the other. That was not David's criticism, right? Was there was no
like if you get a snipe. That's the big one.
So that one's still – they addressed part of it, but there's still other issues that could come up with it.
But, I mean, the question is it's going to be random. So if you think about it, you're probably using, what, 4 to 6 basic abilities, probably closer to 5 or 6 when you're doing combat most of the time. The chances of it happening on snipe, you know, you got to factor that in with the 4% or – 6% if you're dual wielding, and then, you know, it's going to be a 1 in 5 on that. So the chances of it happening with snipe really aren't that high unless you're doing some kind of weird thing where you're trying to only get it with snipe and you only snipe with one-handed crossbows and your other attacks are done with a two-handed crossbow. I mean, that might be one way of doing it. But even that factors further into the switcheroo stuff. And, you know, we heard some feedback on that, you know, that is still one of the biggest criticisms of this is that, you know, there's still lots of focus on the weapon switch, which, I mean.
Yeah. There's going to be a certain amount of that, I feel like. You know, there's going to be a certain amount of that no matter what. There's a certain amount of it right now. You know, will people be switching for two miss and match effects? Yeah, I mean, probably, but I'm not.
And I mean, that's such a RuneScape. Bad, that's such a RuneScape-y thing to do as well, because if you look at Star Trek Online, you can't change weapons in combat, and I don't know if you can do that in other MMOs either.
I don't.
Like ESO, maybe.
Know? Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Can you change a weapon there? I don't know that game too well.
You probably could, but it wouldn't work.
And
you'd have to change. It wouldn't be like as on the fly.
And I mean it's quintessential RuneScape. So, but you know, same thing as we said last week. If any of these changes sound interesting to you, if they sound too overpowered, head on over into the beta and test them out either way. If you want to leave feedback for Jagex, of course, do it in a thoughtful and constructive way. So we'll have a link to the forum where you can dump this in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. So you ready to move into the next big one this week?
I think it's about that time. The old mobile, huh?
Yeah, and you know, we kind of anticipated this, that it was about time for one of these another mobile dev blog with this. So, you know, last we heard, and as we heard around Christmas when they were talking about this, that one that came out right before Christmas that had effectively bad news for the prognosis on this, that they wanted to improve the mid-game experience on this. Well, we got another diagnosis on the user interface at this point in time, and it leads Jagex to the conclusion that yes, the game is performing well for those on Android, and if they want to make the most of the influx of new players that are going to be joining because of mobile, as they saw with old school, they're going to need to make some wider changes to the UI. And we'll go through their reasoning first, and then we'll talk about what that means for you guys after and our thoughts on it. So starting off, many mobile players will, of course, end up playing on the desktop client too. That's a no-brainer. We just talked about this on the bit, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yep.
The future of AFKscape. Definitely a good listen if you're a Patreon supporter. And if you're not, you can gain access to it for as little as a dollar a month, but more on that later in the show. And looking at the launch of the old school mobile beta and game, they see a significant proportion of the brand new mobile players who actually just downloaded the game and started playing it actually playing on the desktop as well. And as it stands for the RS3 UI, the UI of mobile is significantly different than the UI on desktop. And if Jagex wants these new players to find the game that they found on their mobile devices to feel comfortable when playing on the desktop client, then Jagex needs to make sure that the experience across both platforms is similar. And they don't want to support another UI mode. And this is something I said that would be the easy solution if they wanted to do this. In effect, you would have legacy UI mode. You would have mobile UI mode that effectively makes the desktop client look more like a mobile client, but still be conducive to point and click with a mouse rather than touch. And then you would have, you know, of course, the advanced mode that we all use today. And they say if we introduce a new UI mode for mobile devices, then we end up introducing another layer of checks in the development process that will increase the workload of the teams that create content for the game. And this extra layer of development process and QA testing requirements will slow down and complicate the process of creating content for the game. And this is not a good situation that they want to be in. Now, what this means is that they need to do a fair bit of work to unify the UI style between mobile and desktop. And they won't be exactly the same, as the way players interact with the game on both platforms is different. But the closer the UI is on both platforms, the easier it will be to develop for content for the game, and the easier it is for players to transfer between mobile and desktop and vice versa. And they're in the process of defining how the UI will be, but they've made a few small steps forward towards that. And where possible, they're going to be making changes that they feel are both good for both platforms. And a good example of this is the new Worn equipment interface. And what happens with this is that you have the sigil and pocket slots on the Worn interface in game, and they're right next to your head and the cape, right? And the aura is also up there as well. But that's really not intuitive because it doesn't fit the layout of what your character actually is. So they instead have moved the accessories down to below the feet, so accessories will be on their own row. And they actually note with this that when they brought the sigils into game first, they received negative feedback from players, specifically where it was in the classic equipment tree style interface. Not only did it expand the required width needed for this interface, but there might have been other places to add it, and it looked like it was just tacked on. So this is something that they're dealing with on this front right now. Also on mobile, they can't use the classic tree layout because it's too wide. And changing this will let them use the more familiar layout instead of having to use a grid layout. And for many old-time lapse players and even old-school players moving to RS3, a few new equipment slots have been added over the years. And while the core interface hasn't changed, these new slots can reduce the familiarity to them. Also, for new and low-level players, these slots are not relevant until mid to late game, so grouping these together with the equipment will make the interface feel less busy and intimidating for these new players. And how we're doing this change means that the layout will now be taller, potentially affecting top-level interface layouts. So this is just one section of UI that they've been talking about here. And I think I complained about that when the sigil slot first came out back in the day, too. So what this effectively means, I think, is that, yes, there was a focus on building the UI, but it just wasn't thought what was logical at the time, I think. It was just tacked on, as they said. And it's good that they're finally admitting that.
Yeah, my big takeaway from this was when mobile first started, I was afraid that there was going to be too much development with an eye towards mobile, and it was going to change the way that we play on desktop, but I actually think that has been a huge benefit. And we've only benefited from all this. So when I heard that they're going to do more work with the mobile interface, trying to get them more in line, I was actually pretty happy about it. I mean, it's going to take longer, whatever.
Yeah. And of course, one of the best ones that came from this was the resizable ribbon.
Yeah. So I'm actually pretty happy about what we are hearing now.
Yeah, because the next part they mention in this blog specifically is the buff and debuff bar wasn't optimal for mobile because it was at a fixed size, and the system for this has been totally rewritten, and now the buff bar is actually resizable on its own, so that it is now resizable to a minimum of one buff high and one buff wide. So if you want a buff bar that is vertical, you'll be able to resize that with the UI, and everything else in the buff bar is actually going to take priority based on its importance. And there's a good GIF here in this post of the interface shuffling when a grimoire is activated. And potions and summoning pouches are also on here, too. 30 seconds, they bump their priority up the list. And 10 seconds left, they'll bump their priority up on the list and actually flash, believe it or not.
Oh, wow. That's a really, really nice change. See, that's what I mean. That's the kind of stuff that I think is actually great for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And the maximum number of trackable buffs has been increased to 50.
Okay.
I don't know what it was before, but there was also some concept artwork that was floated on Twitter. I forget by who, but it showed increased font sizes for the buff bar as well, which is, of course, something mobile is going to need.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, that's just great. I mean, that's just great to hear.
Like, I can't tell you how annoying I find the current buff bar in game because they're all various widths and whatnot, so in my ideal world, I would have a buff bar that was, you know, one tall. But, you know, you can't do that because otherwise you get overlap. So I'm looking forward to these ones coming to game. Action bars, you saw that players say there's not enough action bars. So in the spirit of cross-platform, we're now giving users an additional 3 action bars to use across mobile and across the desktop as well.
Okay. Yeah, I've been curious how the action bar is going to work. So,
yeah.
What it would look like.
We're going to have to, you know, I haven't played with that since RuneFest, so it's been a long time. But I think they're on buttons, because previously it was a swipey setup to swap between action bars, which you probably don't want. So.
Yeah, it seems like there could be a lot of accidental switching that way.
Yeah. All right. Also, now comes the topic of future release plans, which, you know, I think we need to have a chat about with this, because there's lots of people who are always wondering about this, especially the iOS crowd. So we need to delve into this, and I'm going to actually provide a bit more insight onto why this is the case as it is. The Android members beta will be uncapped in the near future, so anybody who wants to will be able to play it. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so we effectively are going to be having an open Android beta on this. Now, of course, there's the unfortunate side for those of us on iOS. They say they're still developing the iOS version, but it's not in a position where they can release it right now. They're still working on some stability issues, and then focus on the best way to get it into your hands. And based on the way that betas are organized on iOS, it means that they won't be able to run the same kind of beta that they did on Android. And they know that there are many eager and frustrated players wanting to get their hands on the iOS version, just as we're eager to give it to you. So it's up to stability right now for that. And that's very important on the Apple App Store. And the reason for this is because the App Store as it is itself on iOS doesn't support betas. You cannot release a beta or a trial app on the Apple App Store. That is just strictly prohibited by Apple. And that's just been the way it's ever been since day one of the Apple App Store. Back in the olden days, what you used to have to do is you could have 100 people beta test your app, but you had to get them to do this convoluted thing where they would provide something called your device's UUID code, and then you would feed that into the actual app itself, and that would authorize the app, or authorize your device, rather, to run that app. But instead, now we have something called Test Flight, which aims to let people who are developing apps provide a beta experience for them. And, you know, Test Flight is okay. It's not the best way that betas could be dealt with, because you know when you're dealing with these betas, you want it to be as open as it can be, especially when you're dealing with something that is in a high demand situation like RuneScape is, right? So TestFlight kind of does that, but the downside of TestFlight is that while you can subscribe to TestFlight and you can use that to get betas of all your apps, an app developer can only provide up to 10,000 TestFlight beta codes. So the iOS beta will be limited at the most to 10,000 people.
Yeah, it's not very many.
No. So that's the problem that Jagex is up to. And obviously they can't say that here because we know that 10,000 is a drop in the bucket for RuneScape.
Yeah.
And you can't ship an app that has stability issues anywhere. So you can't exactly put out a version that is not ready on the App Store, because that's bad to do as well. So, and you know, previously TestFlight used to be 2,000 users, but it's actually 10,000. So it's kind of iffy on how you want to do this. And if you change the version of your app, you need to make sure that the new version of the app is accepted in TestFlight so that the people who were testing previously don't get kicked out.
Wow. Boy, that seems like... That sounds more like a testing environment at your job or something. Like,
yeah, 10,000 is really not that much. So, and the issue with this, of course, is that they can't just, you know, put it on an app store and have it be a beta. What they actually need to do is they need to generate 10,000 codes and then send them out via the message center and have people redeem them on the TestFlight app.
Oh, that's very convoluted.
Yeah, and you see here why iOS is limited to a little note at the end here on this, because it is convoluted to run a beta on iOS. And I'm just going to say, and I'm going to go out on the limb, that the vast majority of people listening to this and the vast majority of people who are playing on iOS likely aren't going to get to play RuneScape on iOS until it releases.
That's kind of what it looks like. But that makes things really difficult for Jagex, right? Because couldn't you have things come up on an iOS version that you wouldn't have had come up on the Android?
Yeah.
You could have bugs.
But in some ways it's going to be easier to test because you're only dealing with, you know, 3 or 4 different iPhones that are going to be able to support this, right?
I don't know. I have no idea what...
Because right now... Because
the oldest, right, supported.
Yeah, and the 6 is getting dropped this year, so... From iOS 13. So come iOS 13, you're going to have 6S, 7, 8, 10... 10S for iPhones that are going to work on iOS 13. And as you know, we're going to be looking into an era where this is likely going to be released after iOS 13 comes out in September. So at the very minimum, Jagex needs to be targeting the 6S and iPhone SE for RuneScape. That's the minimum of what they should be looking at with that. And, you know, when you count those on your hand, you know, the 10S is one, the 10 is another, the 8 is another, the 7 is another, and the 6S and the SE are practically the same device. They're just different screen sizes. So that's only 6 iPhone types of hardware that actually need to be tested on this compared to all the various different Android phones out there. So it's actually a lot easier to test the Apple stuff than the Android stuff.
So there, I guess there's a certain amount of give and take there.
Yeah. I mean, what you give up in terms of having a limited pool to test with, you give up with the fact you can only offer 10,000 beta codes.
Yeah. Okay.
So, we're going to be watching for that.
It's going to be a while.
It is going to be a while. It is.
Okay.
And my hunch on this, when this is going to be offered, is that, they're going to offer the codes first, probably to the RuneFest goers. That would be probably the easiest way of doing it.
Yeah, and no amount of begging's going to get us one. Yeah. Darn.
And I mean, when it comes down to it, I just actually want to pivot back to the UI for this point, because they mentioned that having a separate UI mode is not good. But there's one final thing about this that I think needs to be said, is that for the UI, this can't be something that the players have input on. It needs to be done from a user interface design perspective by experts within the field, experts internally at Jagex, and experts who are experts in their field at UI design. That's who needs to do this. There can be no player input on what these UI changes look like. I think we need to be abundantly clear on that.
Yeah, I think you're correct there.
Because the players really dislike UI changes and they want to be involved with them. But you cannot let the players design this UI. All right, so you know, I think summing this all up, it comes down to Apple in terms of the issues with iOS. Because, I mean, hey, if they iron out the stability issues and they wanted to support and give a beta out to more than 10,000 people, they definitely could do that. But I was just I just had a bit of a beagle alert slash need for Tannis to get up, and while he was doing that. I actually had a look at some of the test flight stuff, and it looks like that to add people to the list of test flight testers, there's an email address requirement too. So Jagex is going to need to skirt the issue of giving email or giving players email addresses to Apple.
Which will probably just be one line at the end of a huge user agreement.
Which is totally not GDPR compliant, I would imagine. So
no.
You know, as much as players are frustrated, the iOS folks are frustrated with this, it is largely, I think, in Apple's court. So
yeah, it's definitely in Apple's court. I mean, we're going to get this when it's done, most likely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we're going to just take our knocks on that one.
Take our elitist iOS and wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's the mobile dev blog. Next up, we have this. We got this weird looking exclusive email sent for the Land Out of Time trailer, and you know, they made this an exclusive and they teased it to everybody over email. First, and they sent out this email that is an on-location shoot with a dinosaur figure and people in the woods.
On location? Where?
I don't know.
Backyard? Or what?
Maybe. I'm wondering who was in the dinosaur suit. We already know it wasn't Mod Shawnee.
No. I don't know. It's probably not Mod Osborne, because he would have had to wear a mask, and once everyone to see that smiley.
I mean, it could be Mod Porky, because he was the one in the dragon suit at RuneFest.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, it looks absolutely amazing. The video that we've seen on the Land Out of Time, graphically wise, lots of fossils and whatnot, looking around. Mod Aerator and Mod Raymond talking about what we're going to be getting with this, and Big Game Hunter, of course, being the reveal for the part of the Hunter rework, which I think we anticipated there was going to be something Hunter related going to be here. And I think this is the point where you want to chime in with what you all teed up.
I just want to say I think I nailed this one from I forget if it was the first week you were gone, Shane, or the second, but when Ciaran and I were talking about this, I was like, we had a conversation and all of a sudden, like, it clicked and it made sense. I was like, wait a minute, Land Out of Time, that's going to be the Hunter update. That's going to be the PVM style Hunter update. It's dropping with Hunter modernization, and that's exactly what we got here. There are a few things, you know, that I didn't see coming, like with the proximity meters that will be affecting aggression. Some of the you know, more like in-depth mechanics I wasn't sure about, but I thought it was going to be Hunter and the way it tied it together. And
and you know, completely exactly safe too. You know, not an update where you can get killed because they don't want to do that for skilling. And you know, if you look at this as well, interesting stuff in here, in that it looks as though you're almost lining up like some kind of arrow contraption in order to take the creature down. And this is exactly what was detailed with this, is that there's now going to be effectively, first things first, a ranged level 75 tank armor that you're going to get and be able to create based on the things that are dropped from the hunter creatures. And this is something we've been advocating for a long time here, is the ability to make high-tiered armors with skilling pieces of content, which this does, and I think that's going to be really great.
This is a beginning. We don't have a lot of ranged tank armor to begin with. We got barrows at ports. That tier, ports, and then in the tier 80s. And I think that's the only one that I can think of that we can actually make. So this is. I was actually a little surprised. I didn't see this coming, but it looks like they're going to be niche kind of uses for some of this stuff, which is cool. I wasn't sure if the armor had the same kind of mechanics as the weapons. But,
yeah, and they look dinosaur-like, right?
So. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what we'd call them.
And there's a maul also coming with this too. So
that's what it was. The maul. It's just like the Hex Hunter bow, only this is for range, right? Which I think is awesome. We've always talked about the idea of the Hex Hunter bow. It's great, even before weapon diversity was really a thing or even being tested. Now I'm wondering, I'm like, okay, so where does this fit in with the direction we're going? But, you know, so I'm a little confused with that, because mauls are going to have their own kind of effect, but this maul has another effect separate from that. So I think that can get a little
confusing. Do we know what it is? I didn't see much on that.
What the maul effect
is?
Yeah,
the maul effect.
We covered it last week.
Oh, you're speaking of the weapon diversity maul effect. Okay.
Yeah, because there's and then this one, it's just like the Hex Hunter bow, only it hits ranged instead of magic.
Right. Fair enough. Yeah. Right. Of course, the maul one that we were talking about last week, you gain, it acts as though it's 5 tiers higher in terms of strength, but 5 tiers lower in terms of accuracy.
So that's going to be pretty much completely negated if you're facing a ranged opponent.
Yeah. Or even if you're just high enough level.
Yeah, I mean, you're just going to smash. Just Hulk smash.
And this is going to be coming in from a skilling piece of content.
This might, it might be the wow that we've been looking for in skilling. Yeah, for Hunter. Yeah.
And you see where this is all lining up. This is all lining up for the 5-year skilling plan. And with the updates to butterflies, that's also lining up for AFK Escape, which, once again, we just finished talking about. And everything is just teeing up so nicely, right?
It really is. I mean, look, I still have my I'm still apprehensive on the Hunter modernization. I still think it's too much.
Well, they're gonna let people keep the one tick, but the XP rates will be toned down.
See, that bothered me. That really bothers me. Because out of all the things, like I don't know, I felt like if the rate's too low, then raise the rate, but don't encapsulate something that's just manipulation to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, don't make it legitimate. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's like, we had the same, discussion with the 4-ticking auto attacks, right? I mean, it's the same thing. And now you're legitimizing something that is really just manipulation.
But then in the other case, you have weapon diversity where they're adding the double attack with daggers and they're adding in free basics with ranged.
Yeah, I know. So
it's a question of, you know, do you keep the one tick or do you find a different way to add in playing for that? And, you know, I think if the XP rates are down, it's fine because, you know, you look at the same thing with the pitch cannon line fire making and you're in a situation where you're going as fast as your fingers will let you in that case. And it's fine, I think, to have skilling methods like that.
Yeah, I just think at the high end, when you're full on as efficient as possible, they're cutting it down too low. But I also want to draw your attention to something else here with the land out of time hunter part of it. Notice what that range of levels is, and to me that strikes me
75 to 96.
Yeah, doesn't that strike you as exactly the same range as what you would be working on in the arc?
Well, I mean, technically the arc is 85 plus because you need ports to get in there. But I see what you mean.
Yeah, I guess that's true. A lot of overlap there, though. I mean, that's more traditional hunter. I'm very optimistic about this. Like you, I think the biggest thing is, like what you said, it's graphically really enticing. It reminds me a lot of the Lost Grove. I'm not sure we've had a new like kind of area like that.
No,
since
we haven't
Lost
since
Grove.
The Grove. No, that was
so,
the last one.
I mean, that kind of showed us what this could be.
No, sorry. The area where the needle skips took place on the peninsula there. That was added.
Oh.
The needle skips house.
Oh. Okay. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, that wasn't there before Needle Skips.
Okay. All right. Well, let's put that aside because it's not as stunning as what the Lost Grove was. But I think this is going to be in that same vein. It looks like it anyway.
Yeah. And you know, you can make these cues visually, and you can make these cues through audio as well. And I mean, looking at the Land Out of Time and the Hunter, I do have to wonder what it's going to sound like. Because if you look at this and you look at, you know, various key franchises and whatnot, you look at TV shows, and I might be spoiling something that's coming on Informer next month, but I'll just say that, you know, you watch Star Trek and whenever the Enterprise appears, there's a specific sound kind of thing that happens, right?
Yeah.
So what exactly is going to be the sound of the Land Out of Time, and how does that work with General RS3? Like, what I'm getting at is that there needs to be some kind of thing that says, this is a flagship RuneScape 3 update, this is where we're at today. And I think the Land Out of Time is that. Desperate Times is... No, the Needle Skips was that. So,
yeah. Well, they're going to have to get the war right, and hopefully, like if in my ideal world, maybe that war starts off small when you're in, you know, outside of that proximity, but as you get further in and further in, it's getting louder and louder and louder, until when it scares you off and you run off, it's like, blah, you know, and just really hits it. I mean, mainly that would be cool, but it would be super helpful to give you that kind of an audio type of cue, just given how the space around it works.
Yeah. I actually want to bring one other thing up with this right now, and people who have been reading Informer might know about this. You know, I put out my article this week for June, and it's called The Land Out of Time, or Fossil Island, or the actual area is called Anachronia, as they've mentioned before. And, you know, I want to just draw everybody's attention to the fact that the name for this means everything. You know, I'm sure you've had those cases where you've come across children in school got bullied because of their name was very different, right? Yeah. So when it comes to developing new content for RS, the name is everything. And We have heard Jagex effectively call this the land out of time, and it has been called Anachronia offhanded before, and Chronia makes sense because Anachronia refers to the land out of time, which I think we're going to still find something interesting about that going forward with the summer update on that. But following Desperate Times, you know, we got the dig site update, and with the dig site update as well, this, of course, area resides, the land out of time resides near the same spot where Fossil Island is in old school RuneScape. Also, the boat from the dig site is going to take us to the land out of time, and that's the same boat in old school that takes you to Fossil Island. And in concept artwork, this new island has also been called Dinosaur Island. So there has been ideas that there is something to do with dinosaurs and potentially fossils there. And we've heard before that when it comes to old school versus RS3, it's just a different interpretation of the same lore. And with that, I just want to say out there that I don't play old school. But we do need to look at the very fact that players are going to see this as RuneScape 3's parallel to Fossil Island, and there has been no JMod out there that has effectively confirmed that this is RuneScape 3's interpretation of Fossil Island. They just haven't done that yet, and it's my opinion that they haven't done this yet for a very good reason, and that reason is that if they did that, they would effectively be shooting themselves in the foot of a marketing opportunity, as they have been marketing this, the land out of time, so much so that, you know, they've sent people exclusive emails in terms of, hey, check this out. And yeah, well, you know, it was exclusive for a bit. Everybody did gain access to it eventually when it arrived. So while Jagex could be calling this Fossil Island, they are taking very close care to not call it Fossil Island. And this comes down to branding because, you know, it comes down to the fact that there's lots of potential, I think, for the RuneScape community and the RuneScape game itself in the next 12 to 18 months. And as we've seen before with these RS3 updates, building RS3 is similar to a government making political decisions. Capital is won, lost, and spent with the players. Jagex saved capital by going for the simple comp cape rework. They're spending it on the Big Hunter update, nerfing XP rates, and capital was earned with the mining and smithing rework. You're laughing, but that's exactly what's been happening.
No, it's just because it's your governmental comparison, because you must be speaking from a place where that works. I don't know. Don't know what that's like.
But the point is, at the end of the day, Jagex is making decisions on what is going to be best for the player base, and they've been very careful with some of these things that I've mentioned. But what everybody needs to realize is that the community, and they were calling it this before we even got any teasers for it, the community was calling this Fossil Island. And the community is going to call it Fossil Island.
That's the important thing to remember.
Exactly. And Jagex is doing their darndest to make sure they don't. And they're hoping this doesn't happen, but it's going to be hard to prevent. And when we look at this at the end of the day, the update should probably be called Fossil Island from the perspective of the players. But for the sake of marketing and the future of RuneScape 3, it can't get Fossil Island. And this is, you know, the best reasoning, I think, why we haven't heard Jagex say the term Fossil Island. And I just wanted to bring that up because, you know, the community has been dancing around this issue from the very time that square appeared on the map. And there are people that say it should just be outright called Fossil Island. And, you know, the parallels to this are absolutely stunning in that they're dinosaurs and whatnot. And it's different interpretation. And the old school one is linked to the Varrock Museum. This one isn't, as far as we know. So when it comes down to it, yeah, there are parallels. But for it all comes down to marketing and the very fact that Jagex is using their capital that they have and that they've earned with the smithing rework, so that they're just treading carefully with this. And that's why it's called the Land Out of Time and not Fossil Island. And I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention. So,
well, it's kind of like how you know, there was like the DC universe and the Marvel universe, and there's a certain amount of similarities, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
Spider-Man might have existed in both at one time. It's just, to me, I think Anachronia would have been the best way.
Well, that's a boring name, though.
Is it?
Yeah,
see, I think it sounds kind of
I think the
magical,
Land Out of Time, the Land Out of Time sticks more, I think.
But see, when I hear Land Out of Time, I hear Land Before Time. Like, I don't know if it's because I got a kid or something, and I've seen that movie about, I don't know, 15,000
times. That's what I thought, too.
But, and of course it has the same, you know, it's dinosaurs and this and that. I kind of like Anachronia. But the one thing we can agree on is it's not Fossil Island.
But it is. It is. The parallels are there. It's just the RuneScape 3's interpretation of it. But Jagex is never going to utter the term Fossil Island when it comes to this.
But it's like I said. It's like two universes, right?
Yeah. And
this, you know, it's like the planet Earth exists in both these different universes.
Right.
Certain things exist.
You can also look at the old school mobile release last year, right? It drew tons of headlines when it released first. People thought that was RuneScape, and we were very concerned about that. And I bet Jagex was very concerned about it too, because RS3 is supposed to be the flagship, but people thought RuneScape was releasing on mobile. And it all comes down to a respected brand, right? Because the simplest one you can look at this is Coke. Coke is sugar water. But look at the Empire.
Well, it also started with, I don't know, a little bit of cocaine.
Yeah.
Kind of got everyone on it, right?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I personally, you know, this was a topic of an Informer article, and it came about because it's something Sirion and I chatted about, and he feels it is Fossil Island. I feel, for the sake of nomenclature, it needs to be the Land Out of Time, just because that's what it is being marketed as. So,
and I'm kind of in the middle because you already described it, but the players are going to call this Fossil Island. I don't think that makes it Fossil Island.
Oh.
There's no connection in lore, and the only connection we have is dinosaur bones and its location. So it's not the same thing. It's just, I don't know. I don't see it as the same thing.
Yeah. So. Alrighty. Well, I think we can leave that one right there. And that's pretty much it for RS News this week. I don't think there's anything else to mention. Summer special is out.
If
you're looking at getting membership for this summer update, as expected, right on cue, the summer special is here. 3 months of membership for the price of two. You'll get the Dragonkin Imperial armor set as well.
Here's a little PSA, Shane. I don't know if you know this, because you're probably on the grandfathered rate too.
Yes, I am.
I mean, yes, I am too. But a few months back, I had bought a 3-month membership for my junior account. That thing will re-automatically resubscribe you.
Oh, for 3 months.
So when I had been waiting, right, I was waiting for the summer special, and I knew my membership was going to run out like right at the end of May. So I bought a bond to extend like 2 weeks membership, and then I kept waiting for summer special. Well, right when it released, I went to go get it, and it's like, wait a minute, what is going on here? And it said like, oh, you're next, you know, you're not due until August. And I'm like, oh, you're kidding me. So yeah, totally lost out on that, because it automatically will re-up you if you're on a 3-month, you know,
good
if you're not paying
know.
Attention.
Good to know.
Yeah, it caught me.
All righty. We're going to move on to tech news, all that E3 tech news and whatnot. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment and thank our Patreon supporters for this episode of RSBNB Update. What we do and what we do with the monthly bit would not be possible without you guys. So I just want to say a very sincere thank you to everybody who supports us on Patreon, because it truly does mean the world to us with everything that we do on this. So what we have here this week is, well, you know, we did that amazing monthly bit, didn't we, about AFKscape. That was truly something.
It was a lot of fun. Something. I love that our Patreons have actually given us the opportunity to even do these little extra shows, because I think we're
learning so much.
We get a lot out of these ourselves as we're working through these
questions. We're learning so much on this. And this week I'd like to thank Arvids L, Brock H, Darren L, Diana, Kyle, Logan H, Sojuiced, A Devil, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your wonderful support of RSBNB Update. Truly means the world to us. And in case you're wondering how to subscribe to this, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB. For as little as $1 a month, you get a mention in our show notes, early access to the show notes when we do the show, and ability to join our roundtable discussions, which is actually happening this weekend at 2 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be having our first roundtable of RSBNB Update. We're going to get together in Discord. We're going to have a bit of a chat about anything and everything RuneScape related. And, you know, I think with that, we're also probably going to draw some great conclusions as well. So that'll be in the Discord. We'll have links on the Patreon website about how to join that if you are a Patreon supporter. We do encourage you guys to join, and these will be posted later for re-listening. And if you want to go for a little bit more, for $3 a month, you get a special VIP rank on Discord and a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, as well as access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show, in addition to everything else. And for $5 a month, you get a shout-out every week, as well as exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show at the end of the month. And just to recap everything here with this, we're doing our monthly bit. These bonus shows have been truly invaluable to us. We learned a lot about the future of RuneScape with this last one, and how the game has always been and always had a spot for AFK training, but we've been seeing a bit of a shift recently, and what that means for the game is truly astounding. So I would recommend everybody give a listen to that one. We have Inside RSBNB Update. We had an exhaustive interview with Sirion at the start of the month, so that's available for reading as well on the Patreon page. And the roundtable will be this Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern, which I believe is currently 6 p.m. game time Saturday. I will double check that, and there will be information all posted on patreon.com/RSBNB if you're a Patreon supporter and you want to join that. The information will be posted there shortly after we finish recording this. And, of course, should we reach the next tier, $99 a month, that's movie night every month in the RSBNB Discord. So that should be fun if we ever get there, right?
Yes, I think it would be great. I think it would be great.
Yeah. So
I'm excited for the roundtable.
I'm wondering what we're really going to pull out of this. And it is ultimately, you know, the same kind of thing we do on the double XP weekends, and we really enjoyed that, so it should be fun. And yes, I have confirmed that 2 p.m. Eastern is indeed 6 p.m. game time on Saturday that we will be doing this, if you guys hear this before. But fear not, there will be notifications in Discord, on Twitter, and on the Patreon page when it's about to happen. So. And, of course, Patreon supporters are encouraged to join in and chat with us for that. So hopefully we'll see you all there. But once again, if you want to have access to the bits or anything else, you can subscribe at patreon.com/RSBNB for as little as $1 a month. All right. So tech news this week. This week has been another one of those tech news weeks that's kind of been dominated by E3, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, every day you wake up and you see different headlines out of E3, and, you know, I'm always curious, but nothing's really – I can't say anything has caught my attention and really got me hyped like past years. So,
you know, I
don't know. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
You know, I think we're in the era where if a company wants to make an announcement, they can make that announcement, and they can make it on their own time, and they can generate their own social media for it, that they don't really need E3 anymore.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, there's some cool announcements. I'm excited for Doom Eternal and Jedi Fallen Order, but I wasn't blown out of the water, like, in with the anticipation, like, oh, I can't wait till this comes out. Honestly, I thought Nintendo probably stole the show just with all of the different games coming to Switch. Witcher 3 is coming to Switch. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, and lots of interesting looking Zelda ones as well, I think, too.
Yeah, they're looking at a Breath of the Wild sequel, which, I mean, don't get too hyped for that one yet, because we're probably talking years.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just wasn't excited as normal.
Yeah, and I like focusing on the hardware stuff, because we saw details of the PS5, but also the next Xbox, which is going to be at the tail end of 2020. It's codenamed Project Scarlet. It's going to have support for 8K video output, 120 FPS, and it's going to have an SSD-based storage rather than the hard drive, so it should be light years faster. Did you know that if you have an Xbox One, you can hook up a SSD to it through USB and your games will load faster?
I did not know that, but does that have anything to do with, now, I heard him talking about with this SSD, whatever isn't being used actually will help go to loading your games and stuff.
Like, yeah, with RAM and virtual RAM.
Yes. Right. I got a little confused because they said it wasn't exactly as good. I'm like, but you just called it RAM. But
it's virtual RAM. And, this is something that modern operating systems do. And, the Mac has been doing this for a while because most of the Macs are now SSD-based. But Windows can do it as well, believe it or not, because it's all built into the Windows kernel. So this is just further merging of those systems on there. It's going to feature a custom-designed Zen 2 processor from AMD. It will also be backwards compatible with all of the current games that work on Xbox One. So Xbox users are going to be very happy about that. It also supports the controllers and all the accessories that are working on the Xbox One. PS5 base pretty much mirroring the same thing. We're going to see minor differences in terms of actual hardware specs on them, but the PS5 will also support 8K backwards compatibility and SSD. So, what we're effectively seeing here is a movement beyond the Xbox One X, which was the 4K console, to the next generation. And, we use that word lightly of game consoles here for this. And, you play through games on your Xbox One. And, the Xbox Ones that were first released in 2013, 2014 are starting to show their age in terms of frame rate, performance and whatnot. So, and they did also announce that Halo Infinite will be a launch title for this new Xbox.
I'm really, for the first time, considering an Xbox.
You definitely should. Just wait till pick of the week.
Oh, well, I've always been a PlayStation guy. I always have. But I'm really, that announcement sounded, I was just like, wow, there's...
Yeah, and
not much more I could want, it's kind of got everything.
And, I say, and this is going to be even more true when this one comes out, just because of the stupid price of GPUs currently. If you want to do 4K gaming, you're getting an Xbox.
Yeah. Well, there's just so much crossover now. It's just the Xbox plays so well between your console and your PC that's really kind of driving, I think.
Yeah, and that was the big...
My leaning towards it.
And that was the big announcement this week, Game Pass Ultimate, but more on that later.
So. Yeah.
Next piece of tech news, AT&T has canceled all Samsung Galaxy Fold pre-orders and is giving a $100 gift card to any customers that pre-ordered the Galaxy Fold, because Samsung has yet to unveil a new launch date for the Galaxy Fold due to the screen issues.
I hope they get that on top of getting their money back, right? I hope they just didn't take their money. You're like, oh, here's $100. Have a nice day. Ouch.
Best Buy has also canceled all Galaxy Fold pre-orders.
Quit pre-ordering things.
Yeah, and this is a device that costs $1,980.
Yeah, quit pre-ordering things. There will be plenty. Trust me. You will always be able to find one.
I don't know. I mean, if anything, this underlines what a gimmick that was. The fact that Samsung can only produce demo units and can't even ship the damn thing. And Huawei has even put their own foldable phone on hold. So
this never made sense to me. It just never made sense. It just doesn't make sense.
You want to bet that Samsung cancels the entire thing by Christmas?
Man, that's a hard bet to take. I mean, really, the only question is, will it be Christmas or will it be Halloween? I don't know. Take your pick. It's probably happening, though. At this point, it probably should happen, right? I mean, they're just going to continue to lose money.
Recall that back in May, they said that the new release would be scheduled in the coming weeks, but they haven't even said when that's going to be yet. So,
and I just can't forget. I mean, can you foresee millions, or not millions, but even hundreds of thousands of these units being moved and being sold? Like, I just can't see it.
I mean, we're heading into I'm going to say this, a stupid era for smartphones, because you have this debacle happening on one hand, then you have Apple adopting a 3-camera array for the next iPhones, which has been pretty much confirmed by the case designs. Then this week for Google's Pixel 4, it leaks that they're doing a 3-camera array as well, and Google actually goes out and confirms that, yeah, this is what the design for the Pixel 4 is going to look like. I mean, this is the innovation that's happening with smartphones, and I've been, looking at wireless stuff because contracts are up and it's time to see if there's any better deals and whatnot. And I'm just really not a fan of the iPhone X style devices. And I am at this point happy to say that I think the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 8 Plus were probably the best iPhones aside from the SE that Apple ever made.
I'm very happy with mine. And I'm not a fan of the Xs either. Like, I just not a fan.
The thing that gets me with those is that there's so much void space at the bottom when you're in an app using the keyboard and whatnot. You have emojis on one side and dictation on another one, and then there's just a centimeter or two of void space where you have the little indicator to swipe up to get rid of the app. It's space that's not used. They said we were getting edge to edge displays, which you do get when you're scrolling through content. But on the keyboard and whatnot, you might as well just have a bezel there.
Yeah.
And another thing is, I prefer fingerprint reader over face scanner, too.
Yes, that 100%.
Actually,
the face scanner creeps me out, dude. I'm not going to lie. It creeps me out a little bit.
You know what I'm actually hoping Apple does is I hope they at some point release a new device with the modern CPU, but inside of an iPhone 8's body. And if they do that, I will just upgrade to that because I don't want to go down the path that they're currently on.
That would be probably the best case scenario. But I wonder if this is just because are we running out of room for innovation with smartphones, or have the companies gotten so big, so large, and smartphones have become so ubiquitous in our society that they don't have to push that next.
I think it's the second one.
Thing.
I think it's the second one. I think they're all commodity based except for the phones coming out of Google and Apple. Because if you look at a Samsung or a Huawei phone, they are assemblages of parts that are a smartphone. But if you look at a Google phone or an Apple phone, they're actually designed experiences for the user, which the other companies aren't doing.
Right. Okay.
Anyways, let's move on to our next piece of tech news here. You'll recall that at the tail end of last year in November, we talked about the internet losing its lunch over changes that Google was making to the extensions in Chrome for ad blockers and whatnot. And this worried people who make the extensions of like AdBlock Plus and uBlock Origin, because what they were effectively doing with that is they were terminating connections before the browser even made them. And the changes as they were written at the time was going to make it so that they wouldn't be able to do that. And Google says the reason they did this is they did it to help curb abuse through restricting inline installation of extensions on websites, preventing the use of deceptive installation practices, and limiting the data that's collected by extensions. And they've also made changes to the teams themselves responsible for this. And over the last year, they've increased the size of the engineering teams that work on extension abuse by over 300% and on the reviewers by over 400%. And since they've done this, the number of malicious installations is down by 89% since early 2018, and 1,800 malicious uploads are blocked per month, preventing those extensions from reaching the Chrome extension store. Now, they mention, of course, the powerful APIs that are used to build these extensions, and what they said is that with this, when it comes down to it, where's that paragraph here? I lost the paragraph that we wanted. There we go. Okay, so to help with this balance, they are reimagining the way a number of powerful APIs work, and instead of a user granting each extension access to all of their sensitive data, they are creating ways for developers to request access to only the data that they need to accomplish the same functionality that they would have had beforehand. And, you know, we're going to have to wait and see what the response is from the people who make uBlock Origin and whatnot. But this seems to be a much better situation than we were at back in October. So I think progress has been made on this, and, you know, uBlock Origin should presumably continue to function for a long time in the future. So that's good.
Yeah, and sounds like they're blocking a lot of malicious stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm going to say this, but who doesn't want to use Chrome in this day and age when you have an extension store that's so robust and gated? Granted, you can use Safari and Apple Watch as their extensions, but there's just not the level of extensions available on that browser.
Oh, no. And if, I mean, there's the variety is just, it's just there. It's so good. If you're a streamer, there are so many Chrome extensions that you can use to help you out. Oh, man.
And presumably you'll be able to use these in Edge too when the new version of Edge ships.
That would be unbelievable. That would be so great. Like, that would be really, really great. That's the one thing that I miss when I'm using Edge, because I don't have access to those kinds of extensions and those kinds of tools. Wow, I'm looking forward to that then.
Yeah. And, you know, they have all the new APIs documented and whatnot. So hopefully the creators of uBlock will be happy with these changes. So, all right. That's it for tech news. We're going to move on to some other things. But before we do that, I'll just say that we do have a Skill of the Month starting very soon. It's a divination contest. But I also have something called the Runecrafting Competition that starts on June 21st. And there's actually a bit of a story behind this one, because the last Runecrafting competition we did was back in 2010.
That's insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
there was no RuneSpan back then. And there was no Soul Runes.
Wow. This is going to be fun to compare this one with.
So it's going to be an entirely different game. So if you want to sign up for this, head on over to rsbnb.com/skotm, and you'll see the sign-up page that's available. Or if you want to, or if you can't find it, just head on over to the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. You can get the sign-up link there and sign up for the Runecrafting competition. And divination is always an interesting one to watch, so we'll be watching that one when that one gets underway later this evening. So
Well, I mean, not a lot of competitions. You can try. Well, I guess you can't really make money. If you're making money doing divination, you're going to lose the competition.
Yeah.
But all kinds of various things. You know, there's the Guthix Memorial now.
Caches.
There is a shrine. Caches, yeah. It could get interesting.
Good choice with divination. And rune crafting. I really want to see that one. See what the differences are. See, you know, for anybody who does RuneSpan. See for anybody who does Souls, etc. So, yeah.
There could be some really invaluable data come out of that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. All right, so you guys are probably wanting us to get onto the achievements of the week, so we'll do that. So we got 10 of them this week. So starting off on June 12th, we got Juan S. with 99 Herb Lore, Takis Fugo with 99 Mining. Now on the 11th, we got Dianima with 99 Cooking and 99 Farming. Congratulations there on that one. And Wolfie got 120 Constitution on the 11th as well.
Nice. Well, on the 10th, we have Vagon Brill, okay, 99 defense, Yitzi with 99 thieving on June 9th, Mod Dragon X with 99 Mod Dragon X, Mood Dragon X, I'll get it eventually. I'll keep butchering it until I do. 99 Magic on June 9th. Lusha with 99 Magic on the 8th. And State Bird. State Bird.
That's an
interesting
name.
State.
Yeah.
I wonder which state. There's 50 of them. All right, so State Bird with 99 Summoning on June 7th.
Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done. I like seeing these achievements. I always love it when a farming one comes in.
Yeah, we had a couple of those. What was it last week, I think?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, good job, everyone.
So time for pick of the week, and this one comes directly out of E3. And, you know, this is something I think that everybody should probably look at, and everybody who has a Windows gaming PC should probably look at as well, and if you have an Xbox, I think this is a no-brainer. So this is something called Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. It's been in beta for a couple months with insiders, but it actually has finally now been released with E3. And there's lots of interesting things about this, but let me detail what this includes first, okay? So when you join and you get Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, you get Xbox Live Gold, which allows you to play your Xbox online. You also get Xbox Game Pass for console, which allows you to have and download and play for free, effectively, up to and over 100 games on your Xbox One console. And it also gives you Xbox Game Pass for PC, which was first launched this week. Now, let's do some quick math here right now on this. So previously, if you were going month to month for Xbox Live, that'd be $9.99 a month, or around $65 a year. If you had Xbox Game Pass, that would be an additional $12 a month. So when you add that up, you're north of $20 right now. And when you would sign up, if you wanted to sign up for just Game Pass on PC, which anybody can do, you get access to that same library of games on PC for $4.99 a month. And that in itself is a steal, I think. $4.99 a month, if you don't have an Xbox, you get access to a ton of games on your PC, which I mean, I think that's the biggest thing that Microsoft did this week with E3 was Xbox Game Pass for PC. Looking at these games. So just to give you an idea of some of the games that are available here. Let's see. Forza, of course. The latest Forza games are always available on Xbox Game Pass. But also Gears of War 4, Gears 5, pretty much all of the old Halo games, like Halo Wars, Halo Wars 2, Master Chief Collection will be available on PC later this year, and that will be a part of Xbox Game Pass, which is all of the Halo games. So if you've ever wanted to play those, you have a chance in order to, or you have a chance to do that on PC. And, you know, I'm talking about the PC side right now, but there's also going to be games coming forward on that in the future, including Halo Infinite, which is, of course, the new Halo game, as well as Microsoft Flight Simulator. They're bringing out a new version of that eventually as well. So it looks like PC on its own is a pretty good value, but there's one more thing about this, and that is that if you have an Xbox console and you would get the cards, and, you know, I would get the cards and I would get 1 year at a time of Xbox Live, right? And what happened with this is that if you sign up for Xbox Game Pass Ultimate and you have, say, a year or 18 months of remaining Xbox Live time, or even if you had 8 months of remaining Xbox Live time that you already paid for, you can pay $1, and that will convert it to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. So you could have spent $60 for 1 year to get Xbox Live, but you spend $1, and you're effectively getting 8, 9, 12 months free of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. And that's the pick of the week, Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. For $1, if you already have Xbox Live, you can convert that to Game Pass Ultimate and gain access to this huge library of games, but also gain access to that library of games on your PC as well. So that's the pick of the week, Xbox Game Pass Ultimate.
That's an incredible deal. And yeah, boy, they're going at Stadia, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, wow. Didn't even let it get on the ground.
And,
they're just,
you know, like, I mentioned what was on PC, but looking at the console, you get Forza, Gears of War, Borderlands. You also get Rocket League, Metro Exodus, Ark Survival Evolved, PUBG. Is there a game here that you need that is not on this list? I don't think so. And you
know, Sea of Thieves?
Sea of Thieves. Let me have a look. I think that's probably on the list. I think I remember seeing it.
I would hope so.
Yeah, let me have a look on that. Because you're seeing what Microsoft is doing here, right?
Yeah, they're punching Google in the throat. They're trying to. Now get off my lawn, Google.
And, you know, I would say that if you are considering getting an Xbox, go out and get it this week.
Yeah, definitely.
Sea of Thieves is indeed on the list.
Okay, cool. I've been wanting to play that game.
Go out, get an Xbox One X or an Xbox One S if you just need 1080p HD. Go get a year or two of Xbox Live Gold with the prepaid cards. You can get those at Best Buy. Then you pay $1. And you get Game Pass Ultimate for the duration of your Xbox Live. And this entire game library. That is an amazing deal. And it's something that really wasn't talked about that much with E3, but I think it's the biggest thing to come out of E3 this week.
That one was huge. That one caught my attention.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anybody considering getting an Xbox, this is the week to go out and pick it up, as well as a year or so of Xbox Live Gold. Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 also on this list.
Ooh, classic.
Yeah. And, of course, as Master Chief Collection is on the Xbox, that is all available. So, pretty, pretty good. That's the pick of the week.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff there.
Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. And they're just going to keep adding more to the PC collection as well. So, all right. What have you been up to on RS? I know this kind of sucked all the oxygen out because this is a big thing. So, but it's there.
I've been smithing.
Oh, really? What for?
Yeah, I've actually. I've been working on my junior account, getting a smithing up so I can do Elder Rune plate body, fourth,
right?
But the highest tier, anyway. And so we've made it up to, we just crossed 90. the other day. So, cruising. And I really like the changes. Like I said, I haven't gotten the auto heater yet, but I love being able to do multiple projects. Like that, it really helps a lot. And I did go and put in an order for like 100K coal too, because I know I will need it.
Yeah, it did tick up
someday. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm doing my part to help out the economy.
Using all that beautiful clean coal, eh?
All that clean coal, yep. We're still in medieval areas. We don't even have to worry about that yet, right? I mean,
that's right.
Yeah. So basically, I've done a lot of that. I messed around in the weapon diversity just a little bit with the main, basically just because I wanted to take a spear and go do one of my favorite bosses just to see if it would be fun, and it was. So I love, you know, my skill level isn't great, so I like to do God Wars 2 and Corp and stuff like that. So I had to take a spear and go right. See how it was out at Corp, you know.
Okay, and how'd that go? Good? Pleased? I remember we had lots of fun with the spear.
Yeah, I was pretty pleased with it. It's really good. Like, if you're someone that's really good at Corp and can make you move constantly, oh yeah, it's real good. Now, I'm not that good. I'm more worried about staying alive, and if I stay put, then I know where that core is going to be. So I don't walk Corp like a lot of other people do. But boy, if you're walking it, good stuff.
All right. Anything else?
Yeah, that's all I've been up to. Okey-dokes. How about yourself?
I checked out the smithing beta yet again. The weapon diversity beta. I don't know. I feel like I need to spend more time there and actually go down to one of the bosses and, you know, actually see how this mace impacts things like the QBD and whatnot, because you can do that with Malie, and that's what I did in the past. But aside from that, I reactivated the player-owned farm for reasons. I think I am going to do the breeding log.
Ooh.
And aside from that, I've just been woodcutting those magic logs. I wish there was a better way to tie together woodcutting and fire-making to do them together without needing to spend money on it, but I think magics is the best way to go still. So if anybody out there has any feedback on that, let me know. But that's been pretty much it this week. And once again, I'll just draw everybody's attention to that fantastic monthly bit that we did. That was truly something, so I enjoyed that. We do, of course, have the roundtable this weekend, so we're gonna do that. And you know, this month was put off a bit because of the trip that I took, so I think what we're actually gonna do is we're gonna have the bit and inside update release on the first Friday of the month. I think we like that.
Yeah, it seemed I like the spacing.
Yeah, and I think we're gonna do the roundtable at the middle of the month like we're doing this month. It just spaces things out and gives us a bit more room to breathe.
Give some time to talk about updates that have already come in on the month.
Yeah,
with an eye on what's still left to go.
Yeah, I think so. That's good. Yeah. But of course, I'll also just mention that this week marks the podcast's 14th anniversary. We're not doing too much this year. We'll do more for 15 next year on that. But 14th anniversary, 14 years ago, was the update that came out discussing the seeds and farming equipment. Getting ready for the farming scale that was released in July of 05. So that's where we started. That's where we're at today, still dealing with farming. That pretty much wraps up this episode, so I'll just give everybody a reminder that if you want to sign up for the runecrafting competition, you can find the links to that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com, or just head on over to rsbnb.com/skotm after this weekend. And also, you know, if you want to join us in game, you can find us at Friends Chat, Bits Bytes. We're also on Twitter at RSBNB. And if you want to subscribe to the podcast, just head on over to update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. Or if you want to subscribe on iTunes, we do have one just for iTunes, update.rsbnb.com/iTunes. And with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.